Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Call TJ's team today to see why they're referred to so often. A rough loss for the Tennessee Vols on Saturday against Florida. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5, The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Wes Rucker from GoVols247. Wes, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Wes, obviously an incredibly disappointing performance for Tennessee on Saturday in the Swamp. What's been the reaction that you've seen from Tennessee fans? Where does this one rank in terms of the devastating losses down there in the Swamp that you've seen? They've had a few to pick from lately.
Yeah, it's up there. I mean, I think the fact that it wasn't like a last-minute loss or anything like that, or last-second, last-play loss, or you know, that probably takes it down a notch, and it just kind of a good old tail kicking in some ways. And I think that they've seen that book before, right? They've read that movie, they've seen that book, however you want to say it, right? They've been through this, and so I think it's got to be on the list. And for shock value, it probably goes a little bit beyond that, because you didn't expect it to be quite like that. You know, maybe Florida lost a close one, you know, that happens on the road in the league. But the way this one went down, that really kind of gets you, right? And so I think that's one that's going to be up there pretty high for a little bit.
So I'm really, Wes, not liking how the defense, not take the Vanderbilt game out of it, but in recent SEC road games, and I know, you know, different teams, but I did think of South Carolina a few times when I was watching the Florida game, although I guess it's a little different in terms of that was just throw it all over the yard and just everybody's wide open. This was just terrible tackling. But overall, I just come back to the secondary and, you know, some of the efforts to tackle in this game and just some of the sort of lack of awareness that the Vols seem to have. How troubling do you think that is? And how likely do you think it is that maybe some personnel changes could be on the horizon there? Is it just that they just, you know, that this is who they're going to go with and that's that?
No, I think they're going to make some changes. I mean, whether those are changes that are made with guys still on the field or they're made with guys not as on the field as much, I think that remains to be seen. But I refuse to believe that they'll be changing nothing. You know, it's kind of hard to square when you look at some of that stuff. You look at some of those missed tackles. You look at the just the fact that the Florida's offense has got limitations on it. I mean, Mertz played his tail off, and he's not a bad player. He's certainly better than he showed the first couple weeks of the season, but he's also not quite what he showed Saturday night either. He's not quite that, right? He ain't that guy. They made him look like that guy a little bit, and that's problematic. So the tackling numbers, especially with some veteran players, is bad. You just can't have that. You just can't have that. So, and then some of the other kind of penalties and lining up in the wrong places, you know, going off sides on a fourth and one when Florida's about to punt the ball back to you, just all kinds of just wild stuff. And they're going to have to make some changes. I don't know how drastic they're going to be, but they're going to have to make some, because if nothing else, you got to be able to look your players in the eye and hold them accountable for stuff. And if you don't hold guys accountable for stuff, we know where that can lead to. So you have to make some changes.
Wes Rucker with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Wes, what's your read of where this offense is right now? Obviously, it was a slot fest in the Austin Peay game offensively. Couldn't get much going in the passing game. Not much better against Florida. They had the first drive where they looked great, and then it was tough sledding after that until, you know, late into the second half. How much of it is quarterback? How much of it is offensive line? How much of it maybe is Alex Golish not being in there anymore? What do you make of where this offense is right now?
Yeah, I don't make too much of the final one there because I think this is still Josh Heupel's offense. I mean, that's kind of a – like he's still calling the plays and some like – you know, he's still doing some things that, you know, I think it's still his thing. So I don't put too much stock in the last one. I don't have enough evidence yet to say anything is wrong with it being a new coordinator. I think this is still on Heupel at the end of the day. But I think the other stuff, I think you got a question there. And I think I would put more of it on the offensive line than I would on Milton. I just would. I think you watched so many plays in that game on Saturday where they were scripted. They were called so beautifully. They were absolutely the right call. Like that whole, you know, kind of where you set stuff up early and then you sucker punch them with it later. They had some calls that got some guys wide open and they just couldn't protect Milton well enough to get the job done. And those are plays that are just they're mind erasers, right? They really, really get after you. And so I think that's, they got some stuff to fix on that offensive line. Cooper Mays coming back at some point will help. They'd like to get him back very soon. But they just got to play better. They got to be more accountable up there. They've got some issues up front. Now, I'm not saying Milton's blameless, but I also think, and I hear what fans are saying about Milton and this stuff, I don't buy that. I think Milton's got some limitations, perhaps. I think Milton's got some stuff he could do better. But if you watch that game tape and you come away from that thinking that Milton is a bigger problem than the offensive line, you and I aren't going to agree. I mean, when you watch that film, it's just, you know, it's not that Milton is blameless, but they didn't give him much time to do much of anything all night. And that's something that against what I don't think is a great Florida front seven, that's bad news. That's something they got to fix and fix soon.
Well, and then you wonder how fixable it is. Like you said, I mean, Cooper Mays is going to make a difference. But you also, of course, at right tackle, you got no – I mean, I don't think I've ever seen this before, Wes. You know, Gerald Mincy, you know, cited for possession of marijuana. But he still dresses and still plays on special teams but doesn't – like, to me, it's like if you're going to dress a guy and play him, then don't penalize the team by not giving him a chance at a spot that is killing you in a particular game. Can you explain that one to me?
I mean, I was hoping you could explain it to me. You know, I don't get that one. And I've been on board understanding of the way that Heupel's handled a lot of these things, not a lot of them because he hadn't had a lot of them to deal with, but the way generally Heupel has handled things, I haven't had many qualms with. This one to me is, you know, at the end of the day, this is the fault of Gerald Mincy more than anyone else, and he's the one who's got to take responsibility for this. You know, my opinion is this stuff should be legal, but it's not. And so you break a law there, you know, there's got to be some consequences. But I don't know those consequences are really there when they're, hey, you can't play offense, but you can dress and play special teams. I don't know if they thought they could kind of keep that one under the rug. And that way, if he's out there and he's on the, you know, he's on the report saying he played, maybe people don't ask about it. I don't know exactly why it went the way it did. And we've asked Heupel now about it a lot, and he still just kind of doesn't want to talk about it. I agree with you. I think if you're going to dress a guy and you're going to play him on special teams, but not on offensive line where he might help you, because the offensive line's kind of getting beat up, and Crawford in particular is just having a whale of a night. He's just, I mean, poof, it was one of those kind of want to get away moments, you know, with that commercial. That's kind of the night he had. And it's like, well, who would you normally do? You play Mincy. That's what you do. So I don't know. It's weird. I don't get it. Maybe it's not my job to get it, but I think it is my job to get it. And I don't get this one at all. And I agree with you, Joe. I think at that point, who are you really punishing at that point? And I think that's a tough answer.
Wes, last thing for you here, going back to the Milton discussion, because we knew and we talked with you about this at the end of the season. You know, for some portion of the fan base, as soon as Milton threw an incomplete pass, they were going to want to make the switch to Nico at that point. Obviously, you lose to Florida, a Florida team that most Tennessee fans feel like you have no business losing to this year. How real do you think the pressure on Milton is in terms of losing his job as they move forward the next few weeks here? Obviously, they got UTSA coming up on Saturday, and they should win that game. But how real do you think the pressure is on Milton in terms of remaining the starting quarterback at Tennessee? Or is that overblown by the fan base?
I think it's overblown by the fan base, but I'm not going to call it outside the realm of possibility either. I just think, you know, if you – there's a lot that goes into a situation like that. Like, if you don't think it's going to be Milton and you make that move, maybe you've only really got one scholarship quarterback at that point. That's a dangerous place to be in. I also think that Milton's not the first guy, second guy, third guy. He's not one of the top five or six guys I'd blame for the situation they're in right now. And so I think that's the truth. But I also think the truth is there's some stuff Milton could be doing better. So I think there's got to be pressure because no one's job is secure when you're playing like that. It shouldn't be. But I continue to think he's not the biggest part of the problem. A lot of people do. I understand it. They felt that way about this guy for 3 years now. I understand it. I do. He's not Hendon Hooker. But you know what? Very few guys are Hendon Hooker. It's a hard act to follow. But I think when you look at the time he's been given, when you give him a little bit of time, he's made plays. You gotta play around him. You gotta catch the ball. You gotta block for him a little bit. You gotta help him. And I think they're not doing that. So they got some stuff to sort. And if it gets down to, if they get a few more losses and it's late in the season, at that point, maybe you do make a move. That would be the right time to do it. But remember, changing quarterbacks, that's a one-time thing. That's a break, emergency use only. One time you can do that, and you can fire up a fan base, and you can fire up a team a little bit. You can make everybody feel like you got a new lease on life and all this other stuff. But what you don't want to do is what Bama did.
Because I was just going to say, unless you're Nick Saban.
Yeah. I mean, you take Milroe out, and whew, that looked good, didn't it? I mean, you know, it's not – you got to be careful. It's not like it's risk. There's no risk if you make a move. There's as much or more risk if you make a move. I think they're going to keep rolling with Milton. I think if there's a problem that gets so big they make a change, that's fine. But I don't think that's going to happen yet. And I think it might happen later. But right now, Milton's your guy. I think there's no two ways about that.
Well, Wes, really appreciate your time as always. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us this morning. And we'll talk to you soon.
No problem. Anytime, guys. You know that.
Wes Rucker from Go Vols 24/7, our guest here on Robbie and Rex. We'll take your thoughts on the Vols, 615-737-1025. Joe, by the way, the Nick Saban explanation of Jalen Milroe earning the starting quarterback job back yesterday was one of my favorite things I think I've ever heard in my life. The Jalen displayed the leadership I was looking for on Saturday, cheering his teammates on the sideline. Which is code word for, yeah, we saw the other two quarterbacks, and they're god-awful, so we're going to put Jalen Milroe back out there. It was beautiful.
Yeah, that whole thing is very weird. Like, was it like a double-secret probation for him for one game?
I don't know. It was very, very strange. But
it is the right move to go back to him. He is better than those two.
There's no question. I enjoyed the explanation from Saban yesterday. So how fixable are Tennessee's issues as they move forward here into SEC play? We'll get into all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason at Twin Peaks in Cool Springs this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 for our NFL pregame show. They'll break down the Titans Week 3 road matchup against the Browns and give you the latest updates before the game. Our NFL pregame show presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and The Beast Unleashed. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook, live from our 102.5 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Thanks to Wes Rucker from Go Vols 24/7 for being with us in the last segment. And Joe, now the question moving forward is, how fixable are these problems for Tennessee? It was ugly on Saturday night in the Swamp. We've talked about that game, a brutal loss for Tennessee defensively. Tackling was atrocious. Trevor Etienne running all over the Vols on Saturday night. Offensively, they went right up and down the field on the first drive, and after that, it was ugly for the Vols offensively until basically late in the second half when they were trying to mount a comeback. And Milton made a good throw to Brew McCoy down the side. Nice throw over the middle to Dante Thornton as well. But not much from Tennessee's offense on Saturday, mustering up 16 points against a Florida team that I'm still not convinced is all that great. But we'll see how they do moving forward here. Joe, I hear what Wes is saying on the offensive line, and there's no question about it. If you go back and watch the Florida game, the offensive line was not good, and they were getting caved in that game, and Milton was under duress, and that was a big part of the problem, especially in the first half for Tennessee. I do think the problems go deeper than that, though, because the Austin Peay game was a slop fest as well offensively, and the offensive line was not a problem in that game. They were running the ball at will in that game. I think Milton got sacked one time in the Austin Peay game. It's not like he was constantly under duress. So while I do think the offensive line is an issue, Joe, and we'll see what Cooper Mays being back in the fold eventually, I guess, does to help that, I do think the issues for this offense go deeper than just the offensive line right now.
I do too. And look, I do agree with Wes in terms of like the quarterback switch. It's not happening right now. I don't think it should happen right now. It's a big move. Like he said, you make that move and you don't know. I mean, Joe Milton hung in before and stuck around for a long time after losing his job 2 years ago, but who knows what the reaction might be if he gets it pulled from him right now. And I think that's the thing. You're exactly right. The Austin Peay game, it was not some big protection issue, and yet it was the same thing, right? It was screen, screen, bubble, screen. Like, I think the announcer in that game, and I forget who it was, I don't know if it was Tom Hart or who, but used the term survival mode in the Austin Peay game. That's what they were in, even though, like, it wasn't like they were struggling to protect Milton. So, like, the whole thing was just off. Then you add in, no doubt, Florida handled Tennessee up front on both sides of the ball. And that was, I mean, I guess I would put defensive back play as my number one issue in that game. But then number two would be that, just the fact that Tennessee, and frankly, I was more surprised on the other side of the ball, what Florida's offensive line did, because I don't think they're good, or they haven't been good. But also, yeah, I mean, look, Tennessee got beat up front by Florida, no doubt about it, offensively, okay? But like you said, some of these things that we saw with the passing game were already there when you didn't have that matchup issue. So, you know, what does that mean? I'm going to stick with, obviously against certain opponents, like you're going to probably have to get creative. You're going to have to hope to get better, but you may have to get creative with some things in terms of protecting Milton. But in general, to me, you've got to let him use the field and live with a mistake or two. I mean, it's great to never throw a pick in 200 some attempts, but you can't just nibble away, to me, on the perimeter, nibble, 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 an occasional deep shot and think that's going to be good enough. You got to use the field.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Kevin. Kevin, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning, fellas. So, Joe, your comment about the kid getting popped with weed and not being able to play in the game, but being dressed and playing special teams. And I think you kind of mentioned, like, it hurts the team, him not being able to go out on offensive line. Well, I mean, it hurts the team no matter what, if he doesn't play or doesn't dress, or if he plays and does dress. But, man, I think that might be some next-level psychology stuff from Heupel, which I like. I mean, as a competitor, I mean, you want to be out there, right? But, like, you not being able to be out there – for why you have a scholarship. He doesn't have probably a scholarship to play special teams. He's out there to play offensive line and block for Milton. So, man, that probably cuts even deeper. The fact that he's out there for special teams but can't be out there, especially in the face of getting that rush that they were getting. So, I don't know. I kind of like it. But then number two is Wes Rucker talked about the quarterback situations where you can only pull the trigger one time to make that change. And I agree. But to liken it to the Bama situation, that's totally different. Milton was the man coming in from last year after the bowl game. I mean, it was his job. He was the man. But with Bama, they were going into the game with Milton. I mean, they chose Milroe, but they could have went Buechner. They could have went Simpson. I mean, anyway you cut it, they didn't even know what they had. And going into South Florida, which was abysmal, they still don't know what they have coming out of it. But anyways, I just wanted to say, like, Saban going into that game and switching quarterbacks up, he's still trying to figure out what he has. While Milton, if you pull that trigger and you put in Nico, man, that's a game changer. So, anyways, that's it. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. Appreciate it. I hear what Kevin's saying on the Mincy front, but again, it goes back to, like, are you punishing him or are you not? Like, is he dressing for the game or is he not? Because if you're going to dress him out and you're going to play him on special teams, Joe, why would you not just play him on the offensive line? Like, to me, that is punishing the rest of the team. If you're going to play him, then play him. If you're not, then don't.
Yeah, like, I hear what he's saying. It's like you're dressing and then you're not able to go out there. But, like, the whole rest of the team is like, dude, what? Why, Josh? Then just don't dress him, you know?
See what's happening out there on the offensive line right now? Maybe send him out there.
Yeah, because, I mean, not dressing him, obviously, is a punishment. You know, then it's, I think it's more confined to him, and everybody knows the score. Okay, well, he got in trouble and he's out. I don't know. I hadn't seen one quite like that before. And as far as, you know, I agree, I mean, it's a different situation with the quarterbacks with Bama and Tennessee. There's still some level of what do you have in Joe Milton that we were wondering. You know, some people went in the season, you know, he's terrible. It's like, well, you don't know that. And again, I don't think he's terrible, by the way. I mean, some of the best, probably the two best plays Tennessee had in the entire game were ridiculous throws by him for touchdowns, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. So I don't think he's terrible, but there is a lacking consistency. I agree. You go to the freshman, that is a big, big move, and they don't know what they have in him in real games. And if the offensive line is not going to get better, do you want to batter the freshman? That's another thing to consider.
So we'll continue the conversation on Tennessee and their offense. How real is the pressure on Joe Milton in terms of what his job status could look like as the Vols move forward here? We'll continue the conversation on that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. You know I need someone. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road coming up at 7:45. Zach Lyons from Football and Other F Words joining us at 8 o'clock, so looking forward to that. Talking all things Titans at 8 o'clock. Right now, talking Tennessee and the quarterback situation. How much pressure is on Joe Milton right now, Joe, after the loss to Florida? And they're taking on UTSA coming up on Saturday. A sneaky good Roadrunners team, by the way. So I'm very intrigued by this game coming up on Saturday to see how Tennessee responds. And then you got A&M coming up after that. You go in that SEC stretch with South Carolina, Alabama, Kentucky, all coming up for Tennessee. So, Joe, as you view the quarterback situation right now, I agree with you. I don't think Tennessee is going to make a quarterback switch. I think it's going to be Joe Milton's job to lose as they move forward here. But I do wonder if the offense continues to struggle the way it is right now, and if Milton has a bad game or two coming up, what does that look like? And how quickly would Josh Heupel be willing to make the switch to Nico? Joe, how much pressure do you think is on Milton right now, coming off of the Florida loss, to start to play well and to turn things around here pretty quickly starting on Saturday against UTSA?
Well, I think this is, again, where you take the pressure and you separate it into two things. I mean, publicly, yeah, it's a really interesting question on the fan base in the stadium Saturday. You know, certainly I've seen college fan bases chanting for, and it's usually like a freshman or a young quarterback they've never seen because the unknown is undefeated. I mean, I've seen that before, but it's when I've seen that, it's been in a little bit more extreme situations. Look, go back to Garantano, you know, not too long ago, a few years ago, there were calls for, like, I guess basically anyone but him at some point. Right. So all of which is to say that pressure is building. I mean, you know, so can he block out the noise? He has talked about blocking out the noise, but everybody says they block out the noise. It's hard to block out the noise if you're hearing it in your home stadium.
Yep.
So I think there's definitely some pressure, you know, to, like, play well and kind of just calm everybody down on the whole idea. How much pressure is there on him in terms of how the coaching staff views it? Man, I still feel like they're not close to making that move. And I don't know that for sure, but if you go with what was said and even what Josh Heupel said this week, I don't, you know, because it is the big move. And even though we've talked about this with Nico, I do look at it a little differently based on what was said about him and what I've heard about him during camp, from spring to camp, tremendous growth and all that. They love him. He's mature. He's super talented. Like, they're very excited about the future with him. But that move right now, oof, I don't think they're close to doing it. Now, again, I could be wrong. I mean, if Milton comes out and is just really bad, this offense, and it's not like because, you know, he can't set up in the pocket or whatever, and it's not because his receivers are dropping good passes, but if he's kind of throwing it all over the yard and missing guys, well, I mean, maybe it speeds up the process, but I feel like they're still pretty far away from doing it.
I agree. I guess my question that I'd love to know, though, is like, are they one bad Milton performance away from doing it? Like, if they go out in the Texas A&M game and Milton just plays terrible, is that when the wheels start turning, if you're Josh Heupel? I don't know. Maybe their plan is, look, this is Milton's year, and regardless of what happens, he's going to be the quarterback unless it just completely falls off the rails. You know, you want to have Nico sit a year and then him be ready to go in his sophomore season. Maybe that's the plan. But I do wonder, like, if Milton comes out against A&M in a couple of weeks and it's just bad, like, does that get the wheels in motion for Josh Heupel? I don't know. And we won't know, but that's where I'm at with the quarterback part of this right now.
Yeah, and if, you know, it's like if they lose, if they, you know, right now, obviously, I mean, you're still hoping to compete in the SEC East. I mean, you're still hoping to that when Georgia comes to your stadium, that game means something, you know. You lost your mulligan that you could have had at Alabama by losing at Florida.
Yep.
But, yeah, if you lose to South Carolina or you lose to Texas A&M and he plays poorly, then I think you have to – then it's kind of like, you know, look, you go with who you think gives you the best chance to win, first of all, because you have to win. You have to win as many as you can. If it's seven, seven's better than six, and eight's better than seven. So you go with whoever you think can win for you. But I think you're a little more likely to consider that move once you're out of contention. So, and again, if you lose and Milton is the primary reason, then it becomes easier. And look, even if you lose enough and it's not necessarily Milton's that's the problem, but he's not, because right now, again, I agree with anybody who says Milton wasn't the problem Saturday. He wasn't problem one. I would not list him number one.
He's also not the solution right now.
Exactly. Like, he's not doing enough, or they're not letting him do enough, or whatever it is. The offensive line, the coaches, the receivers. I mean, all of it's like not, you know, working well together, but he's not able to, to lift them out of this right now. You know, someone on the text line brought up a good point, which is their pace. And I don't know how much that, you know, how much of that on Joe, I don't know, but their pace has been much slower this year. That's easy to see. You know, they are not, you know, quick hitting people like they did under Hendon Hooker. So that's another thing. But yeah, is Nico the solution this year? You know, probably not. So it's more of a get him some work, get him ready for next year. Maybe it could benefit Nico to, you know, get a taste of it this year. Again, as long as you don't get him beat up. I mean, that's another big part of this, too. You know, they're protecting him is part of the conversation, too, for sure.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Josh. Josh, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, guys. So what I'm about to say is going to – it applies to the Titans and the Vols. So all weekend I heard, up until the second half of the Titans game, like, we got to make the switch. Let's get Tannehill out of there, get Milton out of there. The problem is, if you put one of these young guys in with the offensive line in disarray, you're screwing him over from the get-go, and you may never get that back. So, you know, if you've got all these problems, and I get it, you want to blame the quarterback, that's okay. But you put a young kid in, the freshman or a rookie, you may mess that up off the get-go, and you may not be able to come back from that. So I think it applies perfectly. The chatter quieted down on Twitter on Sunday after the second half started. But it, I mean, you're going to ruin one of these kids if you put them in with these offensive lines as bad as they've been playing. And that's just where I'm at this morning. And I appreciate y'all taking my call.
Yep, thanks for the call, Josh. Appreciate it. I mean, Joe, for Tennessee, the question I have is their offensive line as bad as they look like on Saturday, or is that a one-game thing? Look, I think it's clear at this point the offensive line is not as good as it was last year, along with pretty much every other part of their offense through the first three games. But are they as bad as they were?
The running backs are good.
Running backs look good. It'd be good if one of them get on the field. We'll see what that looks like as they move forward here. But, like, because I don't think Florida is near the best front that Tennessee's going to face this year. I think A&M's got more talent than they do. I think Alabama's got more talent than they do. Obviously, Georgia has more talent than they do. If Tennessee's offensive line is as bad as they were Saturday, it's going to be rough in those games, Joe.
Yeah, and think about last year, that one team took it to them, and that was Georgia. But Alabama and Clemson, with a lot of talent, that offensive line handled it perfectly. You know, did a great job. So, and again, it's offensive line, it's scheme, it's core, you know, it's everything working together, but it is offensive line. And I'm with you. I mean, it's a big problem. And yeah, that is the thing. Protecting the young quarterbacks, how much do you want to throw them into? And if you're just going to throw them in to get hit over and over again, what does that do? LD says, put yourself in Milton's situation. What if they change quarterbacks? What's his next move? How many times can you be the, quote, good teammate? My answer to him was, well, that's where you'd absolutely, to me, you be the good teammate, you stay in, you try to be a leader, you support him, and, you know, you go into the draft process and hope people like those intangibles, that maturity and leadership you showed, and hope they like your tremendous physical ability enough to get drafted somewhere. I mean, what move would you have at that point for Joe Milton? I mean,
you don't have one.
Like, you don't, you're out. You have to be. That's where you really have to be the good teammate. And I'm sure it would be, if it happens at some point this year, incredibly frustrating for him. But I don't think it's going to happen unless it's obvious that it has to happen. You know, I think they're going to take that pretty far. And it's not going to be some it shouldn't be some stunning move to him if it happens. It'll be amid probably quite a bit of struggling and some losing.
Let's go back to our 102.5 The Game phone line and welcome in Mark in Nashville. Mark, good morning, buddy. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, how you doing, Robbie? What's up, Joe?
What's up, Mark?
Okay. Hey, Joe, I you could say the pressure's real with Milton, but I'm going to agree with you and Robbie. You can't throw the freshman in there right now, especially with the offensive line woes that they're having. Maybe they'll get that corrected, maybe not. And with their schedule coming up after UTSA Saturday, South Carolina's a real threat to them, too, Joe. South Carolina has a good team. They played Georgia pretty well Saturday. Texas A&M's pretty good, and Alabama. So I would just probably just ride out Joe Milton as much as I could and just hope that, you know, he shows signs of improvement. The offense gets better. And just leave him in there. I wouldn't really throw Nico in there. I mean, if you're going to start doing something, maybe the game Saturday against UTSA, maybe you let Nico see some playing time in that game. I mean, what do you and Robbie think on that?
Yep, thanks for the call, Mark. Appreciate it, buddy. You know, Nico, I mean, the plan should be, Joe, for things to go well enough on Saturday where Nico gets in there. I think that was exactly the plan against Austin Peay, and it never happened. So, look, UTSA, you can make an argument, I think I don't even know if it's an argument. It's the best non-conference team that they played thus far for sure. They're better than Virginia. They're better than Austin Peay. I think Tennessee's a 19.5-point favorite is what I saw on FanDuel. So, I mean, there are significant favorites in this game, but right now I don't know how much confidence I've got, Joe, that Tennessee's offense can play well enough where Nico's going to get in there on Saturday.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. He should have had at least, I mean, he should have had a quarter, right? He should have had a quarter in the game against Austin Peay, if not a half. And I'm sure that was the thinking, and then it doesn't happen. Now, UTSA is, I think they're 1-2, right? Yep. So now they lost a really close game to Houston, and I don't know how good Houston is this year. But you know, that's been a solid program. I think they were missing their QB, and I don't know the status there. So, you know, we'll see what they are. But I mean, I think they're certainly, like you said, it's the best non-league team on the schedule. which is pretty bad, by the way. Look, if they can get Nico work, that's what you want. You want to get Nico work in blowouts. How many more of those possibilities you have? This one has to count as a possibility. Don't know if it's going to happen. They'd play way better. Vanderbilt at the end of the year. By then, you know, who knows? UConn. By then, who knows what the heck they – oh, that's right. They do have UConn. My God, they have a UConn game, don't they? Oh.
They do.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, so what if Nico takes over the starting job, then –
Milton get back in there against UConn?
Milton get garbage time?
I
don't know, man.
615-737.
I think they're not close. I think they're not super close right now.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well... Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
For those of you who don't know who I am, I'm Paul Crewe. I'm going to be your coach, your captain, your quarterback.
Hey, you haven't played in years. Why can't I be quarterback, huh?
You're right. Let's see what you got. Hit me. I'm open.
Hi.
That's why. Now sit down and shut up.
Who is going to crush?
The gods!
Who is going to kill?
The gods!
Who is going to kiss?
The gods!
Got you.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joe Rexroad, the floor is yours. I turn things over to you.
So two hits on football fields in about a three-day span come to mind here today for me. First of all, last night, Minkah Fitzpatrick, and I saw Chris Martel last night, apparently just convinced that he decided to, I guess, ruin Nick Chubb's career. Like he said, here's my opportunity in a flash of a split second when you're running around as fast as you can and you're trying to stop someone. And by the way, get yourself injured and sent to the hospital on the play, which is what happened to Minkah Fitzpatrick. I mean, I understand it's awful. The injury is awful. Okay. To Nick Chubb, it's terrible. And so, you know, there's going to be high emotion. I'm going to be really interested to see if anyone in the Browns camp even leaves the door open on the idea that this was an unintentional hit to destroy a guy's knee. I mean, obviously where he came into the knee is just terrible and devastating. And you're talking about a guy whose knee was torn up and basically every ligament torn in 8 years ago. And so again, it's awful. I get the emotion, but I can't buy that. I can't buy it. And I have forced myself to watch it a couple times since the show started today, as hard as it is to watch that play. I really don't buy that at all. I just don't. So I hope cooler heads prevail on that front. And he's a pro and things like that go on. I'm also looking at the Henry Blackburn situation, Colorado State. Now, I will say that hit was overzealous on Travis Hunter. Okay. It deserved a flag. And if I was Travis Hunter's teammate nearby Henry Blackburn at that point, I would have gotten into his face probably, you know, and Shedeur Sanders ran a long way to get into his face, by the way. And, you know, and good for him. Like, you should have been mad about that. It was too much. It was going too far. Again, you don't know what the results of some of these plays are going to be. That one I do look at as an overzealous play. Look, Colorado State did quite a bit of that in this game, and that's unfortunate. That said, you now have this guy and his mother's cell phone numbers published on the internet. It's called doxing. I guess it's called doxing, okay? And so now, then his campus address, then his family's home address, and this is all the AD of Colorado told Pete Thamel this. So now it's death threats all over the place and just, you know, just awful human behavior. I mean, it was a bad hit, no doubt. And it's too bad that Hunter's going to miss some time. You feel bad for him. If you're a person who does stuff like this, like, look at yourself in the mirror. Like, what? Think about your existence on this planet. What in the hell is wrong with you? Like, you're publishing this dude's personal information and his mother's personal information, and then saying the most god-awful things. I mean, it's just I mean, I know that this is sort of like a reheating of a rant I've had many times about the state of society and social media, but my God, it's just depressing.
Yep. I mean, and look, there's no question about it. I mean, that one in that game, that was intentional. I mean, it was an intentional hit to try to take out Travis Hunter. It was a dirty hit. There's no question about that. Now, having said that, there's no excuse to then respond with some of the things that we're seeing now go on out there with death threats and, like you said, numbers and addresses being posted on social media. It's just people take things way too far, and we're seeing that happen there. As far as the Chubb hit on Fitzpatrick or from Fitzpatrick on him, like I can't get there to that being intentional. The timing of it makes no sense. You know, Chubb gets the ball. He cuts up back to the middle of the field. He's running left. He cuts back to his right, and then he gets hit 4 yards later. And all of that happens, Joe, in real time in the span of about a half second. And it's difficult for me to buy that Mika Fitzpatrick saw Nick Chubb cut, knew exactly where he was going to be, launched his body at an angle where he knew he's going to take out Nick Chubb's knee all in a half second. And, oh, by the way, like you said, got knocked out on the play and had to be taken to the hospital. After that, it's just really hard to get there. Now, the one thing I will say, and players have talked about this, coaches have talked about this, with the rules being what they are now in the NFL, people are scared to death to go high. They're scared to death to hit people high and to make head contact and get the flag and the penalties. And college football, you get targeting, all these things. I think you're going to see, as time goes on, more gruesome leg injuries and more hits to the leg, hits to the knee than we've seen in the past, because they've changed up the strike zone so much that people are scared to death to go high and they're taking hits low. And Gronkowski's talked about this before. Lots of people have talked about this, how they'd rather take a hit to the chest or head than they would the knees or the leg like that because of the devastation that it can cause. But I don't think this is going away, Joe. I think with the attention that head trauma and concussions have received, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, it just is what it is, I think you're going to see more people and running backs take hits low like this because people are scared to death to hit them high.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue against that. You know, it's interesting because obviously quarterback, there's been an emphasis on not hitting quarterbacks low. I mean, there's an emphasis on not hitting quarterbacks at all, right? But the low hit on the quarterback that can cause a serious leg injury has been also, you know, has turned into a rule. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you can do that to just say any ball carrier in a game, but I mean, there's always going to be an unintended consequence. Speaking of targeting, you know, to the point of like intent, we've had targeting for almost a decade now, like in college football, and it happens every week, and it happens just about every game. Yep. So everybody knows the consequences, yet it keeps happening. And again, sometimes it's not called correctly, but I think that kind of tells you how hard it is to avoid, right?
Exactly.
I just don't, you know, it's like
it's a fast game.
You can't understand how fast when you're talking about humans that are this big and this fast, both going in the opposite direction for collisions. I mean, you just can't. I mean, we could slow down the film all you want, but a lot of unintended, you know, hits to certain spots where you did not intend happens. It happens all the time in the game of football.
Yeah, so. I mean, there are targeting calls that are absolutely intentional, and that's what you're trying to get out of the game, Joe. But there are also, you know, guys that get called for targeting every week that, when they launch and they go to hit, they're aiming at the chest, and all of a sudden the helmet gets lowered and they're striking the helmet, and it's over at that point. You're out of the game.
Exactly. So, yeah, Shane from Manchester City says, everyone nowadays goes for the legs, not to harm, but the rules of forces. I would say that Derrick Henry against the Chargers, there were a couple really hard low hits on him. And look, if I was trying – I mean, take away the emphasis on the head and all that. I mean, frankly, if I was trying to tackle Derrick Henry, I'm going for – his foot.
Well, same thing with Chubb. Like Chubb, he's averaging 5.3 yards per carry in his career. He's hard to bring down. I mean, you got to go low.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's a very difficult thing, but I mean, the fact that, you know, this turns into, and we'll see what it turns into with I'll be very interested to see Mika Fitzpatrick. I just like, and I'm sure he'll talk and all that stuff. I just can't buy for a minute that in any, for even a, an, a half a second, a split second in his head, said, here's my chance to take his knee out. It just doesn't make sense.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Zach Lyons from Football and Other F Words. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans and their performance on Sunday against the Chargers. Look ahead to the matchup against the Browns as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.